My guest at this time is Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee. He joins me today just moments after holding a press conference on Capitol Hill with some of these other conservative colleagues in the Republican conference about moving forward on a budget resolution for the Senate to pass. As has been made note of many times by Republicans especially, it's been over 1,000 days since the Senate, which is still led by Democrats, has produced a budget or even really offered one. And Senator Lee is here now to talk about that as well as what he would like to see in a budget resolution. And, sir, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Sounds like there's probably a twofold approach here, obviously to get a good budget going that helps reduce our debt and focus our priorities a little better, but also to point out the fact that the majority doesn't have a budget resolution. Why don't they?
Well, they don't. They refuse to do it. They don't want the accountability that goes along with it, perhaps. I don't know. I don't speak for them. But what I do know is that our current course is unsustainable. And our massive debt, our trillion-dollar deficits, are quickly catching up with us. And they're threatening the federal government's ability to provide services to our citizens. The status quo really ensures that our economy will never truly recover. And so that's why I proposed the Saving the American Dream plan, so as to make our entitlement programs both affordable and sustainable, and to preserve our ability to fund the operations of government generally.
Now, are you and your Republican colleagues offering a few different proposals to bring to the floor, or are you consolidating into one?
We've got multiple proposals. I've introduced one, which balances in 5 years. Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky has also introduced one that balances in 5 years. Senator Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania has introduced another budget that balances in about 7 years. So these proposals, in addition to the Paul Ryan budget passed by the House, are all different approaches toward addressing the same problem.
Let's briefly go through your checklist here. First of all, you said that it balances the budget within 5 years. Right now we're looking at a deficit annually over the past few years that's been well north of $1 trillion. How do you get it down so quickly?
You know, I think the biggest single factor is to identify the fact that everything needs to be considered, everything needs to be on the table, that we need to consolidate programs where they're redundant, that we need to control the growth, the expansion of existing programs. If we just do those few things, we can balance within about 5 years.
Get a little more specific if you can. Are we
sure.
talking entitlements
sure.
here? What else are we talking about?
Okay, so when we look at entitlements, for instance, Social Security and Medicare available for seniors when they need it. And this budget does that, but it does it in a way that's sustainable, and it does it in part by making some adjustments so that the affluent elderly, people like Warren Buffett, aren't drawing off the program and making it less sustainable when they don't need it. It also acknowledges the fact that life expectancy has been extended, quite fortunately, since these programs were first created, and it gradually adjusts the retirement age for Social Security and Medicare in light of that life expectancy.
So means testing is a little bit of this, and then also along the lines a little bit of the Ryan plan, where if you're above 55, nothing changes, but if you're below 55, you'll see a change incrementally?
Well, it's a little bit like that, but this one starts making changes right away because we think the system needs to be shored up right away. But it does so gradually. It phases in these changes gradually over the next 10 years.
All right, let's take a look at the tax code now. There's been a lot of talk about that ever since Simpson-Bowles, really, and maybe even a little bit before that. There's been talk of reducing marginal rates in exchange for closing what some call loopholes. Others consider them valid tax credits. But this is also in light of the debate where the president thinks that the wealthier Americans should pay more marginal rates or at least a minimum tax, as he's advocating through the Buffett rule. Briefly describe for our listeners your approach to changing the tax code.
Well, it reforms our tax code to make paying taxes simple, transparent, and predictable. It empowers families to save tax-free. It focuses on one simple rate while eliminating the payroll tax, which helps all Americans. It adequately and accurately transmits to the voting public the true cost of government and makes it possible for people to plan ahead and know how much government's going to cost them from year to year.
You want to eliminate the payroll tax. People are going to be a little bit alarmed when they hear that. Explain how you address that.
Well, I address it by focusing it on one rate, one consumption-based income tax, instead of all these hidden taxes like the payroll tax. You know, the income tax system really serves two purposes. One is to fund the government, but the other, which often goes overlooked, is to communicate the true cost of government. When you have things like the payroll tax that the employee, the wage earner, never really sees, it can give people the mistaken impression that government is free, or at least that government is less free than they think it is.
One of your other bullet points is to put the economy on a sustainable path. We see all sorts of projections from the bankruptcy of Medicare within a few years to insolvency and Social Security sooner than most folks had expected. You've already talked about entitlements to some extent. What are the other keys to putting this economy on a sustainable path?
Well, I think perhaps the biggest single key is convincing my fellow senators or counterparts in the House and Americans generally of the fact that the status quo really will undermine our ability to fund everything from defense to entitlements and everything that lies in between. We'll be paying about $1 trillion a year in interest, certainly by the end of the decade, some would say much sooner than that, within just a few years. That's about $800 billion a year more than we're spending right now. That difference, especially that difference added to our ongoing deficits, will inevitably make it almost impossible for us to continue funding the programs upon which Americans, especially America's most vulnerable citizens, have come to rely. And that's the important message here, is to get that idea out there. The status quo jeopardizes everything we do in the federal government.
So you're saying and pointing out that federal spending in the last few years has actually increased each year by basically the amount of the stimulus.
Yes, that's right. And it has increased without regard to our ability to sustain this kind of spending.
You're going to hear this, and you're maybe even hearing this already, that if you make these types of changes, whether it's the tax code, entitlements, there's no way that people aren't going to be left out. If you cut spending that much, the Democrats say that we simply can't afford to, you know, make these reductions in spending, name the program. They're usually saying that. So what do you tell folks who are worried that while this may streamline us, may make us better on the bottom line, not as much debt, maybe even pay off the debt a little bit, that programs are going to suffer?
Well, I would say that a statement like that is fraught with both irony and inaccuracy, because it overlooks the fact that if we continue spending the way that we're spending without making these kinds of modest adjustments to the way that we spend, whether you want to call them modest or significant, they are absolutely necessary. Because if we don't make them now, if we continue to put this off until we're spending $1 trillion a year in interest, at that point we'll be forced to balance our budget, not because we decide to do it voluntarily, but because the bond market and our overall economic situation forces us to. The cuts that we'll face at that point to everything from defense to entitlements and everything in between will be far more draconian, far more painful, far more devastating than anything that we might face if we do so voluntarily and gradually starting now.
You mentioned, sir, that perhaps the toughest part of this whole effort is finding some friendly Democrats. If you kept your entire conference together, you would need 4 Democrats to cross over. How optimistic are you that you can do that?
Well, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. I'm in this fight for the long haul. This is a necessary fight. It's a fight I intend to win. It's difficult to predict at this point how long it's going to take us to win, but we're going to get there.
So it may take a Congress or more beyond where we are right now.
We'll see. We'll see.
How short is the window to get this ball moving?
Well, we'll be voting today. We'll be voting later this afternoon, most likely. So as far as the vote that's going to take place today, we're just a few hours away. But this is not the end. It's not even the beginning of the end. This is the end of the beginning in a discussion that's going to be ongoing and a discussion that the American people feel passionately about and that they're going to continue to speak out about in the upcoming election.
We'll certainly be following and see how the Democrats respond to this, despite having no budget proposal of their own. Thank you, sir, very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.